Okay, so then Gamalama Bay is about the beginning, about the middle of the Armored Line begins to shine. We started discussing yesterday's question of, on Mishnah had said, you're not allowed to put a bowl under a lamp to catch the dripping oil. And we were discussing a few possible reasons why that should be. We had Rava's reason, that the reason is that the Chachamim don't allow you to move a keli for the sake of an unusual Hatzalah Sha'in and Mitzuyah, according to Rashi, when in addition also the thing you're trying to save is Muktzeh, as in this case, dripping oil is Muktzeh. Choice of form doesn't matter whether it's Muktzeh or not, it matters whether it's common or not, and it's not that either. According to Rashi, it's not common for oil to drip, or according to Tosfos, the other way around, it is so common for oil to drip that usually you would put the bowl there before Shabbos, and if you forgot, then that would be the uncommon thing. That was Rabbi's explanation. We had Rabbi Yosef's explanation that once the oil lands in the bowl, then the bowl is going to be mukta for the rest of Shabbos, and that's called Mevato Klin Mehechone, and you can't do that on Shabbos. And then we had Rabbi Yitzchak saying that you're not allowed to move a keli for the purpose of something mukta at all, which according to Rashi, that comes out, in other words, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying one of the two conditions that Rabbi had said. He's saying, never mind whether it's a common situation or not, just the fact that it's mukta is reason enough to answer it, says Rabbi Yitzchak. And according to Tosfos, what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying has nothing to do with what we were discussing up until now. Up until now, we were discussing, according to Rabbi, the question whether it's common, and according to Rabbi Yosef, the question of whether it becomes mukta, whereas according to Rabbi Yitzchak, just the fact that you're moving to something for the sake of something else that's mukta is also. Okay. So Amar Lo Hu Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says to his Talmidim, Chuku v'imru leilu Rav Yitzchak, go out and tell Rav Yitzchak, Kvar tigma Rav Huna l'shmaitach v'bavel. Rav Huna already gave your explanation in Bavel. Rav Yitzchak was one of the Amoroyim of Eretz Yisrael. Apparently at this point he was visiting Bavel. So Rav Sheshes informed him, you should know, so Rav Sheshes wanted Talmidim to inform him, you should know Rav Huna said the same thing in Bavel, as you were saying in Eretz Yisrael, that you're not allowed to, that what Rav Huna is saying amounts to that the same thing as you're saying, that you're not allowed to move objects that themselves are not mukta for the sake of saving something that is mukta. Namely, the Amar Rav Huna, because we find that Rav Huna says, Oisin mechitza lameis b'shvil chai, you would be allowed to, if you have a dead body on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to make a mechitza when it's for the sake of the living, the Einosin Mechitza, Lemes Vishvil Mes. But you would not be allowed to make a Mechitza for a dead person where it's only for the dead person, as we're gonna see in a second. Like, for example, if it's lying there in the sun and you wanna put it under the shade so it doesn't spoil as fast. So Rav Huna is saying amounts to kind of the same thing as what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. That just like Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that now the mess itself is mukta, so Rabbi Yitzchak is saying you would not be allowed to put up a mechitza around, you wouldn't be allowed to take kalim and put them up as a mechitza around the mess where you're doing it for the sake of the mess, only if you're doing it, as we said before in the Gemara. If, let's say, you were holding a keli for some other purpose, like you needed it because you needed the space that it was on or whatever, then you would be allowed to use it for this purpose. Rav Huna is saying, in effect, the same thing. So the Gemara says, Mayhi, what does that mean? How exactly, when we say you make a mechitza for the sake of the living, so how exactly do you do it? So the Amr of Shmuel Bayehoda, V'chein Tana Shila Mari, so like this, Netam Muto B'chama, suppose you have a dead body lying in the sun. So it's lying in the sun, it's much more likely to start spoiling faster. So what you do is, you want to cover it with something. Now, for Pashto, if you just wanted to cover it with a blanket, okay, Yitzchak would still have a problem with this, because again, according to Yitzchak, you can't move a blanket for any other purpose other than if you need it for something that's mutter on Shabbos. But fine, then you don't need the convoluted thing that we're going to say now in the Gemara of how to make an oil, because then you would just have the blanket in your hand for some other purpose and you'd spread it over the mess. But Pashtus, we want to arrange something where you're going to have a cover over the mess, but there's still going to be room for air. There's still going to be room for air to circulate around it, which will also help prevent it from spoiling. So in other words, basically what you need to do is you need to make an oil. And the problem is, you're not allowed to make an oil on Shabbos. So you do it like this. Boim shnei bnei odim v'yoshim v'tzidoi. First, what you have is two people come and sit, one on either side of the mess, on the ground. eventually, after they're sitting for a while on the hot ground, Ham lahem milamata, they feel hot from underneath. They're sitting on hot ground, and they're starting to get uncomfortable. So zem may be mitzvah v'yoshev aleha, v'zem may be mitzvah v'yoshev aleha. So each one now can bring a bed. Obviously, we're talking about in a chotzer or something where you're allowed to carry on Shabbos, and they sit on them. So then ham lahem milamayla. Now they're sitting on their bed, still out in the sun. Eventually, ham lahem milamayla. Eventually, they start feeling hot from up above because they have the sun is beating down on them. So now, mevim machzolos uposin aleihem, and mevim machzolos uposin aleihem. So each one brings a mat and spreads it out over himself and over the mess between them. So they form something. They form something like a teepee. And at that point, they haven't made an oihol, which is also on Shabbos, because they're holding it up, because they're basically holding it up themselves. Now, eventually, there's zokef mitose the nishmas, the hoilachloi. Then one of them sets up his bed on end in order that it holds and puts the end of the mat that he was holding on top of it, and then he can leave. The zezokik mitasu v'nishmat v'holachloi. The other one does the same thing. The nimtas mechitza asuya me'elaha, and therefore it comes out in that sense that the mechitza was made on its own. Now, basically, the reason why you need this convoluted method is, number one, this way you don't have the problem with Rav Yitzchak Din, that you're not allowed to move a keli on Shabbos for the sake of the mess. So like this, when they're bringing the bed, when they're bringing the mat, they're not bringing them, I mean, and obviously they are really deep down, they are bringing them for the mess, but at least the appearance of it is that, not the appearance, and actually practically speaking, it was for a little while, the beds actually served a function for them, the beds and the mat served a function for them to protect them themselves from the heat. So therefore, so you accomplish that by having them each bring the bed and bring the mat that way, and that way you're getting around the Yitzchak's Din. In fact, Tosfos says, I mean, why do they even need to be hot from underneath to begin with before they can bring the bed? I mean, a person's allowed to bring a bed into the courtyard to lie on Shabbos. And also, why then do they need to wait until after they've been on the beds for a while and then they feel hot and bring the mat? Tosfos says, because the Chachamim wanted to make a heker to demonstrate as much as possible that it is for the sake of the living. This way, you make it very clear that you're not just doing it with Tzor HaMess. So therefore, you need that whole convoluted process for that. Number two, the other issue that you have is the matter of making an oihol on Shabbos. Now, in this case, it's not also Jaraita, because it's only an oil arai. It's only a temporary. It's only a temporary oihol. In this case, you are allowed now even a temporary oil, you do have a concept where you can put on the top part and then the bottom part, which is in effect what you're doing over here, because you're spreading out the mat, but then you're spreading out the mat and holding them with your hands, and then you're turning the beds on end in order to hold them up in the air where they are now. So that way, like, you're building the oil from the top to the bottom. And therefore, that's allowed. And then at that point, the fact that it's an oil, all right, but you also built it in a way which is mutter on Shabbos, and therefore you're good.
So on Shabbos, are you allowed to open an umbrella?
So an umbrella is a different matter, because an umbrella is an oil, and in fact, an umbrella
is
an umbrella is considered an oil. And not only that, actually, the post can distinguish. It's an interesting point that you're making, because the post can machronim talk about, for example, the difference between, let's say, holding up a talus. Let's say, for example, you know, nowadays when we're davening outdoors, what happens, for example, you have chosin torah, chosin bereshit. Imagine that our current situation lasts until simchas torah, chas v'shalom, that it should. But and in many shuls, they spread a talus over the chosin torah, chosin bereshit. So if that were to be on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, also come to think of it, the din of oihol apply on Yom Tov as well, would you have an issue with that? So one distinction is actually because over there the talus only forms an oihol only as long as you're holding it up. And we see here from the story with the mat that as long as you're holding it up, it's not considered an oihol at all. So therefore, the talus is not going to be considered an oihol either because you're holding it up, as opposed to an umbrella, which is capable of forming an oihol, even when you're not holding it. Just the fact that, I mean, it has the central pole which holds it up. So therefore, that's more reason to consider the umbrella an oihel than, for example, holding up a talis over the chatzin Torah. I don't know. Another answer also is that when you're holding up a talis, is only for covered. But okay, anyway, the point is that an umbrella would be also because there is definitely an oil. Anyway, the point is that you've accomplished with this whole complex process. You've accomplished that you've been able to make an oil over the mess, but not first of all, you haven't gone against what Rabbi Yitzchok is saying about not moving kalim for tzorich hames. And number two, you've taken care of that you haven't made an oil in a way which is also on Shabbos. In halacha, by the way, it brings this concept, and even though we said yesterday that the halacha is really not like the Yitzchak, you are allowed to move kalim for the purpose of something mukta, as long as you don't make them themselves mukta, like Rabbi Yosef said. Nevertheless, though, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch still bring this whole convoluted process, and the Kesef Mishnah explains, basically, that even though we don't need it to satisfy Rabbi Yitzchak's din, because halacha is not like Rabbi Yitzchak, but nevertheless, we still need this process in order to avoid the problem of making an oihel on Shabbat. So therefore, so you do that, and that way you've avoided making an oiho on Shabbos in a way that's also because you put the ends of it on top of the bed, and only when you leave does it become an oiho, and therefore it's an oiho arai, and therefore you're doing it so this way it's more you're showing when you're making the oiho, you're not making it just for the purpose of the mess, you're making it more for the purpose of the living, and then later on it ends up serving for the mess as well. So that kind of thing would be allowed. Okay. More on this topic of a mess on Shabbos, as Gemara says, Ichmar, mess hamutar b'chama, another case where you have a mess lying in the sun. And let's say in the previous case you make an oil for him where he is by having the whole thing with the beds and the mat. But let's say you don't have the ability to do that. Let's say you don't have two people available to do that. Let's say you don't have beds or mats or whatever available. So what you want to do is you want to get it into someplace shady. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, hoifchoi mimita lemita. What you're allowed to do is you're allowed to turn it from one bed onto another. Now, you're not allowed, in other words, you can't pick up the mess directly because the mess itself is mukta. So therefore, what you do is you take the bed that the mess was on, the bed that the mess was lying on, you pick up that bed and sort of roll the body off that bed onto another bed, and then you take that other bed and roll it onto a third bed, or move the original bed over there, and then roll it onto there, and you do that until you reach a shady area. What you do is you put a non-mukta object, for example, a loaf of bread for a child, on top of the mess, and then you carry them together. Now, usually you're not allowed just to carry mukta together with non-mukta. But in this case, for the sake of the mess, we're going to allow you to do that. We learned previously on Daf Lamed in the whole story of David HaMelech's Kira, that the Chachamim told Shlomo HaMelech to do exactly that. But since David HaMelech's body is lying there in the sun, it was on Shabbos, as we know, when David HaMelech passed away, and we know that David HaMelech passed away on Shavuos, so it's the heat, it's the hot time of the year, so they told him you have to use a kikar etinik. So Rav Chanan and Mashlamia here is saying the same thing. The Gemara points out, when there is a kikar or etinik available, kulam l'tzvig d'shari. Everybody would agree that you are allowed to move the mess that way by putting on the kikar or tinoy. Now, again, usually with most mukta items, you couldn't do that. You couldn't say, let's say, for example, coins or an example of something on Shabbos that's mukta machnas gufoy. It's like a mess in that sense. It's not a keli and it has no use on Shabbos as mutter. So you wouldn't be allowed to take something mutter and then move it together with the coins. But in the case of a mess, the Chachamim made an exception to that. So if you have a kikar or tinoik, then there's no machlokes. A kulam or tzvigi d'shari. Everybody would agree that that's a valid way to move the mess on Shabbos. Take the kikar or the tinoik and move the mess with it. Tzvigi d'lesle. The machlokes is, what do you do if you don't have that? What do you do if you don't have a kikar or a tinik available? Or, okay, we're showing you say that maybe you're talking about you know, there's no kikar or tinik in the entire area, but okay, it's not easy to find one, let's say. So then what are you allowed to do? Are you allowed to do this business of moving the mess from one bed to another, of rolling the mess from one bed to another? So we have the second opinion that mentions only using kikar or tinik. He holds that also moving mukta indirectly is still considered moving. So therefore, you still have, if you were to roll it off one bed onto another, if you were to tilt the bed so the mess rolls off onto the other bed, and then tilt the other bed so it rolls off onto the next bed, Rav would say you haven't accomplished anything. The fact of the matter is you're still moving mukta on Shabbos, and you can't do that. Therefore, he says the only alternative is a kikar or a tinik, and if you don't have a kikar or a tinik, then go get one. Umar's father, where's Shmuel? Where's Yehuda bar Shmuel in the name of Shmuel is saying that no, the Tiltum and Asad, he holds that carrying the mess indirectly like that is not considered carrying. Therefore, that's an equally valid method of doing it. If you can't easily get the kicker or a tunic, then that's fine. You can also do it by rolling the mess from one bed to another. So now Tosfos actually gets into a discussion over here that there are other places where we talk about tiltum and atzad of mukta, and we say it is allowed according to everybody. Tosfos draws a distinction between you have tiltum and atzad. You have, for example, you have a situation. For example, there's a Mishnah towards the end of the Masechta that gives an example. Let's say, for example, you find money on a pillow. You find coins on a pillow on Shabbat. So now, if you want the pillow itself to sleep on, then you're allowed to tilt the pillow and have the money and have the coins fall off it onto the ground. And if you need the actual space where the pillow is, let's say the pillow is on a chair and you want to sit on the pillow, then you're allowed to pick up the whole pillow and move it together with the coins. The Tosfos says because over there, fundamentally you're moving it for the sake of the pillow because you want to use the pillow or because you want to use the space where the pillow was or whatever. So that kind of tiltum and atzad would be fine. Here we're talking about the other way around. Fundamentally, you want to move the mess. Fundamentally, you want to move the mess for the sake of the mess itself. So therefore, that's a different matter, and that's what Rav and Shmuel are arguing over here, whether you can do. The Rosh brings up another possibility as well. There's another kind of tiltum and atzad, which would be mutter, is if you move the mukta objects using a body part that you usually wouldn't use to move things. This is we have nowadays, for example, if you find something mukta, and you move it, for example, using your elbow, something that's based on what the Rosh says. Anyway, the Gemara says, Lema Ketano, should we say then that this Machloikas Rav and Shmuel about Tiltum and Asad is actually the same as Machloikas Tanoim? Namely, we learn in a Braita, Ein Matzilinus HaMes Mekne Ableika, you're not allowed to save a dead body from a fire. So if you have a fire breaks out in the house, so we discussed yesterday that if there's Sakonet Nefoshis, then you put it out, but otherwise you're only allowed to save the things that you're allowed to save on Shabbos, and you have to just let the fire rage and then let it do its own thing. Well, let's say you have a dead body in the house. So the Tanakama of the Braita is saying you're not allowed to save the mess because the mess is mukta after all, and that's it. If it gets burnt, it gets burnt. Amr of Yehuda ben Lachish, Shamaiti, Shamatzilin is a mess with Nadleza. However, Rav Yehuda ben Lachish disagrees and says, no, I heard from my Rabbeim that you are allowed to save the mess from the fire. So we have to ask, Heichi Gomi, what's the scenario in the Braita? Eid ikka kikar tinik, if you have a loaf of bread or a baby or something else that's not mukta available that you can carry together with the mess, my time of the Tanakama. Then why would the Tanakama say it's also? We said before, everybody agrees a kikar or a tinik is a valid method of carrying a mess. By the way, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions, we talked about this briefly on Daf Lamed, that if the mess is wearing clothing, then you'd be allowed to carry it even without the kikar or a tinik, because just the fact that it's wearing clothing, the clothing is not bottle for the mess. So we'd have to be talking about that either the mess is not wearing clothing or that it's wearing tachrichim, which are going to be buried together with the mess, and therefore they're bottled for the mess. Anyway, so if there's no kikar or tinik, if there is a kikar or tinik available, then why would the Tanakhama say you can't save the mess? Everybody agrees that you can carry the mess together with a kikar or tinik. And if there's no kikar or tinik, my time is Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish. Then why would Rabbi Yehuda ben Lachish allow it? L'chora, he also has to agree that you can't move the mess on Shabbos because it's mukta. And if there's no kikar or tinik, then you can't do anything. On the face of it, therefore, they must be arguing about the situation of tiltum and afsad. Are you allowed to roll the mess from one bed onto another, and then from another onto another, etc., until you get it out of there? The marisav or tiltum and afsad shmei tiltum. The Tanakhama would say that's still considered moving mukta on Shabbos. Therefore, it would be also to do that. Omar Sava, whereas the Yehuda ben Lakish says, Lo Shmei Tiltul, that is not considered carrying. And there you go then. So you have that Machlokas Rav and Shmuel would be the same as the Machlokas of the Tanakhama and the Yehuda ben Lakish. The answer is the Gemara says, Lo, not necessarily. Jekulei Alma Tiltum and Asad Shmei Tiltul, everybody might agree that moving it indirectly like that, using the bed, is actually considered moving it on Shabbos, and therefore it would be after. Behind the time of Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish's reason why he would say that you're allowed to move the mess, why he would be saying you're allowed to move the mess even directly, even without a kicker or tinnik, or even with the bed. The reason is the mitoch sha'adam bohol amesa, because a person is in a panic because of his mess that is going to get burnt. Elo shori slay. So if you don't allow him to get the mess out in some way, also lechabuye, then he's going to come out. Then he's going to come to put out the fire on Shabbos, and that would be also, of course. I mean, okay, maybe it wouldn't be also daraisa because not malachos shenis tuchel gufa, but still, according to the Rambam, he would be chayav daraisa for that because the Rambam passes like Rabbi Huda. The rest of the Rishonim will pass like Rabbi Shimon would say it's not a malachah daraisa, but still you're not allowed to do it. You're still not allowed to do it to Rabbanon. As opposed to mukta, the whole concept of mukta is only dirabanan. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish says that you have to allow him that dispensation to be able to move the mess somehow, because otherwise he's likely in a panic to put out the fire. Tosfos points out, interesting, that when it comes to a person's mamon, we take exactly the opposite. We take exactly the opposite view. We say the reason why, in the first place, we have restrictions on what you're allowed and not allowed to save from a fire on Shabbos, and under what conditions you're allowed to and not allowed to, which we're going to learn about in the 16th Perek, Bez Hashem, that there the Chachamim are concerned that if you allow him to just save everything like he would on a weekday, then he's likely to put out the fire. So Tosfos says the difference is a person doesn't have as much desire over the loss of his possessions as he does over the loss of his mess. So therefore it comes out the other way around with his mamon. If you allow him to save it, then which to begin with he's not as concerned, he's not as in a panic about if he loses it. Therefore, if you allow him to take it all regular in the regular way, then he's likely to forget a Shabbos and put out the fire. As opposed to with the mess, he's so panicked over it, he's in such a state over it, he'd have such fire if the mess gets burnt, that if you don't allow him to carry out the mess somehow, then he's going to end up putting out the fire. So the Gemara says, what's the actual halacha? Amr of Yehuda ben Shila, Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechanan. Halacha, Kerb Yehuda ben Lakish ben Nes. The halacha is life of Yehuda ben Lakish by the mess, so you are allowed to carry the mess. You are allowed to carry the mess even if there's a fire on Shabbos in order to save it. So that's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, is that if there's no other way, there's no possibility, let's say, for example, the fire is spreading fast, so there's no way of doing the kicker or chinik, and there's no way of doing the rolling from bed to bed, then you can just carry the mess directly, because otherwise the Chachamim are concerned that you're going to be putting out the fire because you're in a panic that the mess shouldn't get burned. Otherwise, you have to do things as much as possible behetzer. If you have the kicker or chinik, then you do that, and if not, then you do the hoshka, the mitzah, the turning it from bed to bed. The Shulchan Aruch also discusses the question, what about if the only way to save the mess is by carrying it to a karmelus? Would it be mutter? Because after all, carrying it to a karmelus is only dirabanan, or maybe not, because after all, carrying into a karmelus is a more serious thing. We'll take up that matter again, Be'ez Hashem, in the 10th Perek, when we get back to these dinim of carrying out a mess on Shabbat. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mo says, we said in the Mishnah, "Ein ne oisin heimenu l'pisha einim in amukon." We said that the oil that drips from the lamp on Shabbos, we said you're not allowed to have enough from it because it wasn't set aside for use on Shabbos. It was meant to be burnt up in the lamp, and therefore it's mukta. So tarat abarim, we learn in a brisa on that. Moisra hashemen shemaneh v'shavakah ora oser. the leftover oil in the lamp or in the bowl after the fire went out also is also to use. But Reb Shimon not there, but Reb Shimon would say it's mutter because, as we said before, Reb Shimon would say Reb Yehuda, who has a broader definition of mukta, and he's the Tanakhama of our Braisa, so he would say that whether the lamp is actually burning right now or not, either way, that oil was designated for the lamp before Shabbos, and therefore it's also to use for the rest of Shabbos, even after the lamp goes out. And he holds the concept, he holds the concept that we learned before, that we touched on yesterday, called Migur Geskatzai Lebeinah Shmoshes Geskatzai Lekula Yoyma, that once it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, which it was, because obviously that's when the lamp was lit already, because you light candles before Shabbos, then it remained mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Reb Shimon doesn't hold to that concept. Reb Shimon holds that it can become unmukta during the middle of Shabbos. He also holds that it can become unmukta in the middle of Shabbos. He also holds that it's only mukta as long as the lamp is burning, because while the lamp is burning, either one way of looking at it is that the lamp and the oil in it serves as a basis for the flame, because the flame itself, of course, is mukta on Shabbos, and the lamp and the oil are supporting it. Or the other way of looking at it, Tosfos discussed earlier, is Reb Shimon would agree that the oil is also to use because it was hooked to the mitzvah, say. It was designated for the purpose of a mitzvah, because it was used for the mitzvah of lighting Shabbos candles. So as long as it's burning, Reb Shimon would say it's also, but once it went out, then Reb Shimon would say that the oil is no longer mutter, and you'd be allowed to use it. Okay.
And that's the halacha?
So the halacha is, the halacha in that is like Rabbi Yehuda actually. In general, we say in the halacha of mukta, we say that the halacha is like Reb Shimon, but there are certain details. Even on Shabbos, where we do say that the halacha is like a Yehuda, and this seems to be one of them. It looks like from a quick look that the halacha is accepted like a Yehuda in that regard, that the oil remains mukta, that the oil remains mukta for all of Shabbos. The oil was a basis for Davar HaAser. We do accept Rabbi Yehuda's position that once something was mukta for the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta for all of Shabbos. So therefore the lamp itself and the oil would be also because again it was mukta, not because it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos. Again, in other words, even if we were to accept Rabbi Shimon's position that. Even if we were to accept Reb Shimon's position that it's only mukta machmas mitzvah, okay, but the fact is, even he agrees that it is mukta at the beginning of Shabbos because machmas mitzvah or because of basis, which are both concepts that Reb Shimon does agree with, we do, to this extent, accept Reb Yehuda's concept that once something is osur at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains osur, it remains mukta the rest of Shabbos, and therefore it comes out that the lamp and the oil themselves will be mukta for all of Shabbos. But we're actually going to get into more detail about that now in this next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. So let's start those, and then we'll be discussing this point further. So the Mishnah says, "Nitalpun ner chodosh avalo yoshan." You are allowed on Shabbos to move a new lamp, new meaning that it was never used for lighting. And a lamp, by the way, you have to remember, a lamp in those days was typically made out of earthenware. We're going to be dealing in the Gemara with the case of a metal one, but here we're talking about one made out of earthenware. So if it's new and it was never used for, and it was if it was new and it was never used for lighting yet, then fine. Then you're able to move it on Shabbos. Because then it's still clean, and you could use it for other purposes. You could use it to put small items into it, for example. Avalo yoshan, but not if it's old, not if it was previously used for lighting in, because then it becomes what's called mukta machmas miyus. Then it becomes, it's filthy inside from the oil, and it's not something really that can ever be cleaned properly. So therefore, the Tanakama, which again, as we're going to say in the Gemara, is Rabbi Yehuda, is holding that it's mukta machmas miyus. It's mukta because of the disgusting aspect of it. Because you would never use it for any other purpose, only for lighting, and of course you can't light it on Shabbos, and therefore he would say that it's mukta because it's called mukta machmas miyus. Reb Shimon says, no, kol aneris metalplin, all kinds of lamps you're allowed to move on Shabbos, even if they're old ones. Chutz min haner, adolek for Shabbos, unless it's actually burning on Shabbos, there you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos because as long as it's burning, because you might put it out. Actually, the Gemara is going to end up later on in a couple of blocks. The Gemara is going to discuss this point and mention a couple of possibilities. One is because you might put it out, and the other reason, again, like we said before, is because it's a bosis, because you have on top of it is a flame, which is something mukta, and therefore it's like the equivalent of what we were discussing yesterday, for example, about the bowl with the oil in it, or about a Shabbos table with candles on it, et cetera, where therefore it would be mukta because of that.
When we talk about ner, we talk about the candle or the candle holder or both?
We're actually talking about the lamp. In times of the Gemara, they didn't have candles like we're familiar with. They had lamps where you would fill up the lamp with oil or some other kind of fuel, and you'd put a wick in that would stick out at one end and you'd light it. The kind of candles we have nowadays obviously are also mukta as well. Although in Shulchan Aruch it does mention that, for example, that you are allowed to, let's say you have, we talked yesterday about putting a bowl down in order to catch the dripping oil, and we said you're not allowed to do that. It does say in Shulchan Aruch, though, that let's say you have a regular candle, like the kind we have nowadays, burning, and you want to put a bowl over there to catch it in case it falls down, that you would be allowed to do. That's not considered mevatel kli mehechanai, because as soon as the candle falls into it, you could shake the thing out of the keli, and then the keli would be mutter to use again. For example, the pillow with coins on it on Shabbos, where you're allowed to shake the coins off the pillow on Shabbos if you need the pillow. So by the same token here, you'd be allowed to shake the candle out of the bowl. So therefore, the bowl doesn't become mukta in that regard. But in general, in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, we're not going to be dealing with cases involving candles, because they didn't have candles as we're familiar with in those days. They had lamps, oil lamps.
So the candle holder, what's the
standard? Candle holder would be basically the same thing as we're talking about here, over here with the lamp, although again, we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to talk in the Gemara about metal ones. So wait, hold that thought, must see. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Rabbi Yehuda says, what we just said, the Tanakhama says, that you're only allowed to move on Shabbos a new lamp, not an old one. Not an old one that was already used to light it at least once, again, because it's filthy inside and you wouldn't use it for everything, for anything else, and it's considered mukta matas miyus. Reb Meir says, kol aneres metalflim chutz min aner shehid liku boy b'shabbos. Reb Meir says that you're allowed to move any lamp, even an old one, except if it was lit on Shabbos. Now, we don't mean like what Reb Shimon said in the Mishnah, if it's currently burning on Shabbos. Reb Meir means if it was lit at any time during Shabbos, then you're not allowed to move it for that whole Shabbos, because again, Reb Meir holds of the concept that we just said that Reb Yehuda also holds of, called Migurges Katsai Lebena Shmoshes Katsai Lekula Yoma, that once it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Reb Meir agrees with Reb Yehuda on that. So Reb Meir, in other words, is taking a middle position between Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda. He doesn't agree with Reb Yehuda that an old lamp is mukta. He doesn't hold of this mukta machnas miyus business. But he does hold with Reb Yehuda about that if something was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, which in this case it was, either because it was a bosis for the flame, or because you might put out the candle on Shabbos, because you might pull out the flame on Shabbos if you move it around. So he says once it was mukta, he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on that once it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta for the whole rest of Shabbos. So therefore, he says if it was lit at the beginning of Shabbos, then it's also to move for that entire Shabbos, even once it goes out. But if it was never lit that Shabbos, then Rabbi Meir says you would be allowed to move it even if it was an old one. Reb Shimon says you're allowed to move any lamp unless it's actually burning currently on Shabbos. But he says if it went out on Shabbos, then you are allowed to move it because, again, he's the most makel. He doesn't hold of muktzah machmas miyus. He doesn't hold the muktzah machmas meals. He also doesn't hold of this business that if it was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains muktzah for all of Shabbos. So as far as he's concerned, while it's still burning, sure, it's also to move because again, either because of bosses or because you might put it out accidentally. But once it went out, then he says muktzah machmas meals I don't care about. That it was muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains muktzah for the rest of Shabbos, I also don't hold of. Therefore, it's allowed. Avol, but, continues the Braisa, kosel ka'ora v'ashoshis. Suppose you have, instead of a lamp, you have a cup that you filled full of oil and put a wick in, or a bowl, or a lantern. Lo yiziza mimakoimam, then those things you're not allowed to move on Shabbos even after they go out. Now, why not? We're going to see, after we quote the rest of the Braisa, then we're going to deal with that question. Why should a cup or a bowl, et cetera, be different from a lamp? Continues the Braisa. Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Elazar, Rav Elazar, says that he was really supposed to be Rav Elazar, Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon Omer, Nistapik min haner hakava, Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon is the most makel. He says you would be allowed to use oil from a lamp that's about to go out. Now, like this, we learned before that as long as the lamp is burning, you're not allowed to take oil from it because taking oil from it amounts to mechaba. It amounts to that you're causing it. It amounts that you're extinguishing the flame. We talk about in the second paragraph, two explanations of Rishonim, what the problem is. Either the problem is that you're causing it to go out faster, because with less oil, obviously it's going to go out sooner, and that would be usur. The other way of looking at it is actually that would be mutter, because that's called gram kibui, that's only called indirectly causing it to go out, and that wouldn't necessarily be usur on Shabbos, at least not under a raisa level. So the other explanation is, Tosfos explains, that the problem is as you're taking out the oil, you're weakening the flame a little bit, because you're weakening. Or actually the other way around. Tosfos gives the first explanation. The Rosh gives the second explanation, which is that as you're taking out the oil, you're likely to interfere with the flame and cause it to be a little dimmer. Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon is saying over here, that's all true as long as it's burning normally. But when the flame is about to go out, then at that point, if you take out oil from it, there's no problem because you're not really affecting the flame in any way. Therefore, it would be mutter, he says. And he says also, also, he says, another caller, you would be allowed to use the oil that was dripping out of the lamp even while the lamp is burning. So we looked before that, we said before that is also, we said according to all the Tanoim we quoted so far, that was also, that was why we said you're not allowed to put the bowl down there before Shabbos to catch that, to catch that oil. Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon would disagree with that concept. That's all according to Rashi. A number of other Rishonim have a different explanation that ner kova, Rashi has said ner hakova means a flame, that means a lamp that's about to go out. A number of other Rishonim, it means that it already went out. So in other words, Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon would be saying that once the lamp went out, you would be allowed to use any oil that remains in it. And he would also say, even while it's burning, you're allowed to use any oil that's dripping from it. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, so we see Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon is the most makel. So Amar Abaya clarifies, Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon, Sovala Kavua B'Chada, Upolagale B'Chada. It comes out that Rav Elazar b'Rav Shimon agrees with his father, Rav Shimon, on one particular aspect of the deed, and he disagrees with him on a different aspect. He agrees with his father Rav Shimon on one part of the din, delesvay mukta. Like Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar doesn't hold of a broad concept of mukta. So therefore, again, he holds that once the candle has gone out, Rav Shimon himself had said before, we just said at the top of the Amud, that once the flame goes out, Rav Shimon would allow you to use the rest of the oil, because according to him, it's not mukta. It's only mukta as long as the lamp is burning, because you might put it out. Because if you take out oil from it while it's burning, then it would be also, because then you're weakening the flame. But once the flame went out, Reb Shimon would say it's fine to take the oil out. Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon agrees with Reb Shimon on that and says the oil is not mukta. Unlike Reb Yehuda, who said the oil was mukta because you designated it before Shabbos to light the lamp with, and it remains mukta for the rest of Shabbos. So Reb Shimon had disagreed with those concepts. So Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon also disagrees with those, like Reb Shimon. But then on top of that, he goes and he disagrees with Reb Shimon on a detail, namely, even Reb Shimon is not saying that you're allowed to use the oil before the flame goes out, before the flame completely goes out. Reb Shimon would agree that you're not allowed to use the oil. The Ihu Sava, Afagab the Light Kava, whereas Reb Elazar and Reb Shimon would be saying that even before that, and Reb Shimon would be saying two things. Number one, that you're not allowed to take any oil from the container, from the lamp, while the flame is in the process of going out, while it's about to go out. Number two, Reb Shimon would agree that any oil that dripped out from the lamp all that time while the flame was burning is also mukta. Reb Elazar and Reb Shimon disagrees with Reb Shimon on that. He says that no, once it's about to go out, according to Rashi's explanation, then you're allowed to use the oil even in the lamp. And second of all, that in general, even while the flame is burning, that you're allowed to use the oil that dripped out, he would say you're allowed to do that also. So in that he disagrees with his father, Reb Shimon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so now let's analyze the braita a little further. We said, so far we have four opinions. We have the Yehuda who says that the oil is mukta altogether. We have the mayor who basically agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, except that he holds like Reb Shimon when it comes to the definition of mukta, but he holds like Reb Yehuda that if something is mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it remains mukta for the whole Shabbos. We have Reb Shimon who disagrees on that and has a very narrow concept of mukta. And we have Reb Elazar and Reb Shimon who goes beyond even Reb Shimon and says that the oil even that drips out is mutter, and according to Rashi's explanation also, that even while the candle was about to go out, that you're allowed to use the oil that's in it, that while the lamp is about to go out. So now, we said in the Braisa, we said, on the other hand, if you have a cup or a bowl or a lantern full of oil, then you're not allowed to move them on Shabbos even after they go out. So the question is, Maishinahani, what's the difference between those and a lamp? If Reb Shimon is allowing you to move a lamp after it went out, why would he say that a bowl or a cup or whatever are any different? So Ula says, okay, you're right. The last part of the Braita is going according to Reb Yehuda. The Braita started out with Reb Yehuda's explanation. Then we interjected Reb Meir and Reb Shimon's opinion. And now we're going back to Reb Yehuda, who would say that the same thing as you're not allowed to move a lamp. He would say the same thing would apply if it was a cup or a bowl or what have you.
Why would you think that a cup would be allowed or a bowl and not a lamp?
Well, maybe because those don't get quite so disgusting when you light them. A lamp has a very small opening for the wick, and the oil stays in there for a long time, and every week you light with it, so it becomes really filthy inside, and it's very hard to clean because of the shape of it. So therefore, you could argue it's mukta machnas miyus. A cup or a bowl or whatever are much more open. It's much easier to clean them. So therefore, maybe it's not considered mukta machnas miyus. And still, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the problem with that is maskif la mazutra. However, mazutra asks on that, ihochi mai avol. So what does the braisa mean then when it says but? If you're going back to Rabbi Yehuda, then there's no reason to say but. He says you're not allowed to move a lamp on Shabbos once it was lit, as if it was lit any time previously, even not on this Shabbos. And also the same thing applies to a cup, etc. What's the avol, which implies that you have one of the previous opinions that's matter, is asking it in this case. Ella, on the Mazutra, the Olam Reb Shimon. So actually, Mazutra says, no, actually, we are talking about this part is according to Reb Shimon. But what it is like this. The Chi Kashari Reb Shimon, when is Reb Shimon mocking you to move the lamp after it went out on Shabbos? the ner zuta would only apply when it's a small lamp. The daita, you look, hey, we're then to begin with, when Shabbos begins, you have in mind it's not going to last. It's not going to last throughout Shabbos. So therefore, you have in mind eventually, sometime over Shabbos, it is going to go out. And at that point, I intend to use. At that point, I intend to move that lamp someplace else. As opposed to when it's a larger container, avohani, dinafishi, but when it comes to a cup or a bowl or what have you, there's much more oil in them. There's a good chance that that lamp is going to last, is going to continue burning throughout, that light is going to continue burning throughout Shabbos. Right, then we can't, then Reb Shimon wouldn't say, then Reb Shimon would agree that it's mukta for the rest of Shabbos, because you didn't expect that it was going to go out anytime during Shabbos, and therefore it would be considered mukta for all of Shabbos. That's the difference. In other words, Rav Shimon would say, when do I say it's not mukta? If there's a reasonable expectation that it's going to go out on Shabbos, so then to begin with, at the beginning of Shabbos, again, Rav Shimon doesn't hold once it's mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it's mukta for the whole Shabbos. He doesn't hold that concept. So according to him, therefore, as long as there was a good chance it was going to go out on Shabbos, then he has in mind the beginning of Shabbos. It's going to go out eventually, and when it does, then I'm going to be able to move it on Shabbos. As opposed to if it's a large thing where you didn't think that it was going to, then even if it does somehow happen to go out on Shabbos, then Reb Shimon would agree that it's mukta for the whole Shabbos.
So then that's Mar Zutra on Reb Shimon.
This is Mar Zutra explaining the Braisa, that the last part of the Braisa is going according to Reb Shimon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's a little more.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're adding a new dimension to what Reb Shimon said. This that Reb Shimon said that the oil is only mukta while the lamp is burning, and that the lamp itself is only mukta as long as it's burning. That would only apply if he actually expected that sometime on Shabbos it's going to go out. Worth mentioning, by the way, in this regard, and we're going to talk about it. We'll probably talk about it on Amud Beis as well, that actually Rashi holds in this and in a number of other places in Shas that when Rabbi Yehuda is saying, and in certain cases Rabbi Shimon is saying, you're not allowed to move a keli, that would mean even if you need it l'tzorach gufo yomakoymai, even if you need the space where it was, or even if you need it for some other purpose,
let's talk about that on other days. Actually, let's not confuse the issue right now. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Reb Shimon would be saying that if you didn't expect that the candle was, that the flame was going to go out on Shabbos, then it would be mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Okay. So the question is, Bahatanya, but we learned in a Braisa before. We said we quoted a Braisa before. Moisu Hashem and Shabaner v'Shabakara also Reb Shimon Master. At the top of the Amud, we brought a Braisa that said that the leftover oil that's in the lamp or in the bowl is also Reb Shimon Master, and Reb Shimon says it's Mutter. So you see, Reb Shimon is Master even in a bowl. So what are you telling me that he's saying it's also in a bowl? The answer is Hossam the Karda Dumya Dener. That's talking about a small bowl, which in that sense is similar to a lamp. It doesn't have enough oil to be able to burn the whole shop. Whereas over here we're talking about a bowl which is more like a cup in that it's larger, because after all, in the Braisa that we quoted in our sugya, we're saying kois of ka'ara v'ashashi, we're saying a cup, a bowl or a lantern. So by putting the bowl in between over there, between the cup and the lantern, we're implying that it's a large bowl, the kind that holds a lot more oil than a lamp, and the kind that is likely to burn throughout Shabbos. And again, therefore, Reb Shimon is saying that he agrees it would be also to use any of the oil on it on Shabbos or to move it on Shabbos, because then he didn't expect at all during Shabbos that it was going to go out anyway. Okay. Let's continue with this matter of moving lamps on Shabbos. So now we're going to start dealing with a metal lamp. Now a metal lamp, unlike a kli cheres, doesn't become so filthy and disgusting when you use it to light on Shabbos. So it's not so muktamach lasmi. So therefore, Amar of Zera, tamot shehid liku by the Shabbos, a candlestick, which means a metal lamp that they lit in on Shabbos. So now again, remember we had three opinions before. We had four opinions actually. Whether you're allowed to move at any time during that Shabbos, we said Rabbi Yehuda had said no. Whether it was lit when we talked about an Urdan way one, we said Rabbi Yehuda had said once it was ever lit before, even if it wasn't lit this Shabbos, then it would be also to move it on Shabbos because Muktamach Matnius. Reb Meir would say only if it was lit on this Shabbos, because Muktamach Matnius he doesn't hold of, but he does hold once it was Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, it's Mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Reb Shimon had said that's Mutter to move it once it goes out. But now we're talking about a metal one, though. So if it's a metal one, and it was actually lit in on Shabbos, L'divrei HaMasir Osir, so here the opinions would be exactly the other way around. Reb Meir, who said before that a used earthenware lamp, you're allowed to move on Shabbos because he doesn't hold a muktamach matnios, he would agree in this case that it would be usur to move it on Shabbos because again it was lit at the beginning of Shabbos, so it's muktamach matnios. So it's mukta because it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos and it remains mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, who said in the case of the earthenware one that it would be usur to move, because muktamach matnius, he would say it's mutter in this case because since it's made out of metal, it's not so most. So even if it was burning at the beginning of Shabbos, Rashi learns Rabbi Yehuda would say muktamach matnius I hold of. Muktamach mas isur, the concept that it should be also because at the beginning of Shabbos, that that it's muktamach mas isur, because in other words, it's also to move it for the rest of Shabbos. That Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't agree with. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who's machmer on the dinim of mukta, Rabbi Zera would say, holds that only muktamach mas mius is also, but muktamach mas isur is mutter to move. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's mutter to move it. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has a bit of a problem with Rashi's explanation because in that case, then we're only dealing with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. What happened to Rabbi Shimon? Tosfos brings a different explanation. Rabbi Shimon, who's matu you to move an earthenware lamp on Shabbos, once it went out, he would say that here it's also because a pamos, a metal candlestick, is large, so therefore it's the same problem as the cup or the bowl that we just talked about, where you didn't expect that it was going to go out on Shabbos. Whereas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that it's also if it was earthenware and if it was lit on that Shabbos, they would say when it's earthenware, you have two problems. There's muktamach matnius and muktamach matnius. But when it's a metal one, then you only have the matter of isur. You don't have the matter of muktamach matnius. And therefore they would say there's mutter.
So why is that?
Because again, so far what we're saying is they would both hold that, or according to Rashi, according to Tosfos, according to Rabbi Meir as well, they would say muktamach mas isur is not a concern. The concept that something should be mukta because its primary use is for something that's usur, that they don't hold of. So once it goes out, then fine. They would hold that muktamach mas isur doesn't apply. The only issue is muktamach mas mius. A metal one doesn't become mius, doesn't become so disgusting as an earthenware one. You could conceivably use it out, and you could conceivably clean it out and use it for something else. It doesn't absorb the oil like an earthenware one does. Therefore, they would say that it would be mutter to move it on Shabbos once it went out. Whereas, again, Horn Tadashi was saying that. According to Rashi, was saying that Reb Meir was saying that Reb Meir would say it's usur to move it on Shabbos, because Reb Meir would be saying muktamach mas isur is a problem, muktamach mas isur is not. In other words, according to Rashi,
Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are saying exactly opposite things. Each one holds of a category of muksa that the other one doesn't. According to Tosfos, it's not like that. According to Tosfos, it's just that we mean that Rabbi Shimon wouldn't allow it because this tamos is a very large, container, it's a very large lamp, and therefore it's the same problem as the cup that we discussed before, but you don't expect it's going to go out on Shabbos. Okay. The question is, remember the Yehuda Muktamach Mius Islay, Muktamach Isu Leslay, are you telling me that Yehuda only holds the Muktamach Mius, that something can be also be called disgusting and it's dirty and you would never use it for anything else? And he would say Mukta Machmas Isu Leslay, but you're telling me he wouldn't hold of the concept of Mukta Machmas Isu, where you have something which is, whose primary purpose is Isu, and was actually also at the beginning of Shabbos because it was lit. You're telling me that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of that concept. Well, Hatanya, we learned before, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kolonneris from, different brides actually. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a kolonneris from Maschus Metalzlin. Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to move any metal lamp, unless one that was actually lit on Shabbos, because again, because if they're metal, then they're not Mukta Machmas Mius, but if they were lit at the beginning of Shabbos, then they were Mukta Machmas Isur. So we see Rabbi Yehuda does hold a Mukta Machmas Isur. So why would Rabbi Zera be saying that if the lamp was lit on at the beginning of Shabbos, that Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to move it on Shabbos once it went out? We see from this bright that not. Rather, what was said, what we were saying, was supposed to be like this. If it was lit on Shabbos, would give a hackle also. Everybody would agree it's also. Again, according to Rashi, we mean Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would say it's also to move. Rabbi Shimon, maybe according to Rashi, would still allow it, the same way as he allowed an earthenware one once it went out. Rav Tosfos would say that even Rav Shimon would say it's also to move not because Mukta Machmas Mius and not so much because Mukta Machmas Iser, because you didn't expect before Shabbos that it was going to go out. You set it out of mind before Shabbos and you lit it before Shabbos, and therefore you didn't intend to move it on Shabbos because it's large. But if they did not actually light at that particular Shabbos, Divrei Hakol Mutter, then everybody would agree that you're allowed to move it, even if it was previously used, because, again, it's not Mukta Machmas Mius, because it's metal, and it doesn't become disgusting like Kli Cheres. It could be clean, and it's not Mukta Machmas Isur, because it wasn't lit at the beginning of Shabbos. So we do see, after all, that Rabbi Yehuda does hold of both types of Mukta. Okay. The actual halacha is, there are several categories of mukta that we do have on Shabbos. Again, we don't completely hold like Rav Shimon in these things. To a certain degree, we do hold like Rav Yehuda and like Rav Meir. So there is a concept of mukta machmas isur, and we do again say that we do say like Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda have been saying that if it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta throughout the whole Shabbos. So that we do hold of. On the other hand, the concept of Mukta Machmas Mius doesn't really apply on Shabbos. If you have something which is filthy, you're still allowed to move it on Shabbos, at least for Tzorach Gufoy or Mekoyim, right? You're allowed to move it on Shabbos where you need the actual object itself for some other purpose. So let's say even you have a Kli Cheres. Okay, it's disgusting and filthy inside because it absorbed oil, and you're never going to be able to get it clean. But let's say you want to put something else in it on Shabbos. Or let's say you want to move it itself on Shabbos because you need the space where it is. That would still be Mutter. There are several categories of mukta which do apply on Shabbos, but not all of them. There are certain kinds of mukta. We'll deal with these dinim more extensively later on in the sechta. We have to distinguish when it comes to mukta between things that are kalim and things that are not kalim. Things that are not kalim, like the dead body we were discussing before, or like coins, or rocks, or sticks, or whatever, those are called mukta machmas gufay, those have more stringent rules. Those you can't even move a sort of gufay because they're not even a kalim. As opposed to, when it comes to kalim, most kinds of kalim that are mukta
You're allowed to move a third of Gufoy Makayim. You're allowed to move them when you need the keli for some other purpose. For example, we talked in the previous parak, for example, we talked about the case of a shofar on Shabbos where you want to use it as a baby bottle. So that would be an example of taking a keli that's usually used for Isser, and in this case, using it with Tzarech Gufoy, to use the thing itself, but for a purpose of Mutter. That would be allowed on Shabbos with most kinds of keli that are Mutter. Or another example, let's say, would be to take a hammer to crack nuts. Such things are Mutter on Shabbos. Also, with Tzarech Mekoymoy, let's say, for example, the shofar is, the hammer or whatever is on a table or a chair, and it's in the way, and you need to get it out of the way. You're also allowed to move it on Shabbos, unless it was left there deliberately before Shabbos, and then anyway, the table or the chair itself becomes a bosser for davar aser.
You have to move it with a shinui or just without it?
No, if you left the shofar or the hammer on the table or on the chair before Shabbos, then the chair itself or the table itself becomes bosser for davar aser, and that chair actually remains mukta for the entire Shabbos. But if you just accidentally left it there, and now you need the chair to sit on, so then you are actually allowed to pick up the hammer and move it off the chair and put it someplace else on Shabbos, because that's called Tzarech Mekoymoy. So for most, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta a category of Mukta, which we haven't dealt with yet, called Mukta Machmas Chisorin Kif, that has stricter rules. But most kind of, the average kind of Mukta thing that we think of on Shabbos is usually Mukta Machmas Isser, and those times you're allowed to move the third of Gufoy Mekoymoy. Rashi actually here and in a number of places learned that when we talk about a coin of Yehuda, that you're not allowed to move these things on Shabbos, that it would mean even Lotzorech Gufoy Mekoyim, right? Tosfos and most other Rishonim disagree with that and say that even Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to move it Lotzorech Gufoy Mekoyim, right? The Machlokes that says over here where you're not moving it Lotzorech Gufoy Mekoyim, right? If you're moving it, for example, what's called Mechamel of Sale, we talked about previously, if you're moving it, let's say, because it's in a place where it's going to get damaged and you want to move it in order to protect it, would you be allowed to move it then? Rabbi Yehuda would say no, and Rabbi Shimon would say yes. Okay. Continuing on this topic of Mukta items, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Mitzvah Shiyicha Dolamois, also the Talfula. If you have a bed that was designated to put money on it, then you're not allowed to also the Talfula, you would be also to move that bed on Shabbos. Now, what we're saying is, in other words, that it was designated to put money on, you didn't even necessarily ever put money on it. You just designated it for that purpose, which nowadays, I guess the equivalent would be, let's say you have a wallet, which you never used yet for money, and Rav would be saying this also to move it on Shabbos. But the Gemara says, Maitzvah of Nachmi. So Nachmi says, I have a contradiction. We said in our mission, Metalpulim Ner Chodosh Ava Lo Yoshan. We said you're allowed to move a new lamp, but not an old one. Even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds of a very broad category of Mukta, even he says that just the fact that it was made as a lamp and it was designated for lighting it is not enough to make it Mukta. So why is Rav being Machmi even more than that? And in fact, we can make a Kav HaChomer. Madach, a lamp which is made specifically for the purpose of lighting in it, and still kilo hidlik v'ashari v'tasola, and yet, if he never actually lit in it yet, then it would be mutter to move it, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Mitzvah b'lav l'hochi avida. A bed was not made in the first place to put money on it. You only designated it for that purpose. Loi kol shekin. Shouldn't it be how much more so that it should be mutter to move it on Shabbos? So how can Rav say that it would be also to move it on Shabbos? Not choice, but Tanam and Alvus takes up the possibility that maybe you would say, if you were to say it's mukta, maybe you would say that it says mukta machmas chisorin kis. Which are, again, mukta machmas chisorin kis, where you have something that's very expensive and you don't use it for anything else, then it would be also, but fine. The Gemara is asking, so just the fact that you designated it for that can't be enough to make it mukta machmas chisorin kis. Because after all, it wasn't even made for that purpose. No. Ela itmar hachi itmar. You're right. If it was said, this statement of Rav must have been said like this. Amr of Yehuda Amrav, Mita Sheyich Delamos, when you have a bed that was designated for putting money on it, only if Niach Aleil Mois, if he placed money on it, if he placed money on it sometime previously, so he started using it for that purpose, also Latalua, so now it would be also to move it on Shabbos, and again, like Tosfa says, it might even be considered Mukta Machmas Chisorin Kis, because you would never use it for any other purpose, and therefore, so therefore, it would be also to move even Latalua Gufor Mekaymai. But if you didn't yet put any coins on it, then you would still be allowed to move it on Shabbos, because just the fact that you designated it is not enough to make it also to move. On the other hand, if you never designated it to begin with, that specifically you're going to use it for coins, you just happen to put coins on it, then it depends. Yes, Shalei Amois also a Talpula. When there's coins on it, then it would be also to move it. But if there's no coins on it currently, and again, it was never designated for coins, so right now there's no coins on it, and it was never designated it, so therefore you'd be allowed to move it, even if previously at times you put money on it, you put coins on it, because it wasn't designated for that. And there's no coins on it, so therefore it's not a boss, it's a java or also either. Provided that the coins were not on there at the beginning of Shabbos, because again, if the coins were on there at the beginning of Shabbos and you wanted them to be there, then the bed is a boss, it's a java or also, and then you're not allowed to move the bed anyway on the grounds of that. Now, Tosfos explains, let's say, how do coins come to be on there in the middle of Shabbos? Let's say, for example, that a little kid put him there, or let's say a guy put him there, with your consent. So now there's coins on there on Shabbos. But we're still saying that it becomes a boss for Dover also then, just like we talked about before, about the bowl that the oil drips into, and therefore from now on for the rest of Shabbos you're not allowed to move that bed because the coins were placed there deliberately. In a normal situation, obviously, the coins can only be there if they were there at the beginning of Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Alma Ula, Masiv Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer really. Rabbi Eliezer pointed out a contradiction. So we're saying that if the bed was a basis for Javar or Osir at the beginning of Shabbos, so if you have the coins were on there at the beginning of Shabbos, then it's mukta for the whole Shabbos. Like we said before, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir hold this concept that once it was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, then it remains mukta for all of Shabbos. And the problem with that is, Rabbi Eliezer brought a contradiction on that from a Mishnah in Kavan. The Mishnah there is dealing with something called a Shida. Rashi explains that a Shida is a wagon, a wagon made out of wood or whatever. Tosfos explains that actually we're talking about a large cabinet or something. Tosfos and many other Rishonim say that we're talking about a large cabinet. So the Mishnah says, Muchni Shalah. Now you have, this Shida has a Muchni. Rashi explains that Muchni means a wheel. So it means the wheels of the carriage. Tosfos discusses a couple of other possibilities. It might mean a wheel, but not the kind of, but more like a wheel that's more like a base for the cabinet. Or the Rambam has another explanation that Mukhni means a drawer in the cabinet. Anyway, the Mishnah says this man shehi nishmetes, if that Mukhni is removable from the Shida, so. According to Rashi, that we're talking about wheels, then what we mean is, in other words, that the wheels are easily removable from the wagon. According to Tosfos, it would mean that the base is easily removed from the cabinet. According to the Rambam, it would mean that the drawer is removable. Then the din is ein chibula. Then it's not considered to be attached to the keli. As far as that, if the shida becomes tamei, that the muchni should become tamei as well. Also, the ein nimdedesima, we also don't measure the muchni as part of the volume of the shida when it comes to seeing whether it's makabel truma. We touched on a concept before that if you have a large, we touched on in the second paragraph, that if you have a large wooden keli that holds more than 40 sa of dry content, then it's not makabel truma. So when it comes to measuring the volume of it, if the mukhni is removable, then we don't count the volume of the mukhni when we're counting whether the thing holds 40 sar or not. So it's not measured as part of it. The ein makselas ima ba'oil ames. It does not help save things from becoming tame in an oil ames. So here, again, when we're talking about, if we're going to Rashi, that we're talking about a wheel of a wagon, basically Rashi explains that you have a situation where you have something where you have something sticking out over the top of the wagon, but it's on top of the wheel. So if the wheels were not removable, then the wheel would prevent the trauma from going to the object that's above it. But because the wheels are removable, they don't prevent it, and the trauma comes to it. A lot of different possibilities of what exactly Rashi means. And in fact, Tosfos, partly for that reason, has a problem with Rashi's explanation about it being a wheel of a wagon, because you don't really find that a wheel saves things from becoming tummy that way, because after all, the wheel is touching the ground. So therefore, that's why Tosfos prefers to explain that we're not talking about a wheel, that we're talking about a base or something. Anyway, because it can be removed from the mukhni, from the shida, therefore it doesn't save things from becoming tummy in an oil mess. The ein gurin osu b'shabbos b'zman sheyesh alei amos. You're also not allowed to drag here's the point, which is relevant to Hilchos Shabbos. You're not allowed to drag that shida on Shabbos when there is money on the mukhni. So the mukhni is, according to Rashi, the mukhni is a wheel. It has a hollow space in it where you could put money. So therefore, but because the wheel is removable, it's considered a keli of its own, and therefore you're not allowed to drag the wagon, the shida, on Shabbos when there's money in the mukhni, because the mukhni is a basis of davar asur, and when you're moving the wagon, you're moving the mukhni, implying ha ein aleil mois shaliyah, implying if there's no coins on the mukhni now, then you're allowed to move the wagon on Shabbos. The implication seems to be that even if there were coins on their Bein HaShemoshes, as long as they're not there now, then you are allowed to move it. So you see that even though it was Mukta, even though the Mukhni was a boss for Dover or Osir at the beginning of Shabbos, nevertheless it's still mutter to move on Shabbos. So how does that work according to Rav? The answer is the Hashish, Reb Shimon. The answer is that Mishnah would be according to Reb Shimon. The less by Mukta. Reb Shimon doesn't hold, as we said, of such a broad concept of Mukta. Reb Shimon does agree that coins themselves are Mukta. So as long as the coins are on it, then he agrees that the Mukhni would be a boss for Dabra Osir, and you're not allowed to move the Mukhni and the wagon with it. But once the coins are off, he doesn't hold that once something is Mukta for part of Shabbat, it remains Mukta for all of Shabbat. So good, now the Mukhni is not Mukta anymore. And now the mukhni is not mukhta anymore. The Rav to Rabbi Yehuda clearly. Rav, meanwhile, holds like Rabbi Yehuda that once something is mukhta is also at the beginning of Shabbos, once something is mukhta at the beginning of Shabbos, it's mukhta for all of Shabbos. So there you go. Therefore, he would say that once the coins were on the dead at the beginning of Shabbos, even though you didn't designate the dead for that purpose, then it would be also to move the bed the whole rest of Shabbos. Okay. One practical thing that comes out of this in Shulchan Aruch is a case where you left coins in a pocket of a garment before Shabbat. So you actually have in Shulchan Aruch, it draws a distinction between, among other things, what kind of pocket is it? Many times the pockets in our clothing are only sewed to the clothing on the top, and the rest of the pocket hangs free. So that would be more like the mukhni that we were discussing. Now, the pocket is not easily removable. And the Mishnah goes on to say there that if the mukhni is not removable, then different dinim apply. So if you have a pocket like that and you have money in it, then you would be allowed to move the piece of clothing on Shabbos, even though there's money in the pocket, because the pocket, therefore, basically is bottled to the beged. On the other hand, if you have the kind of pocket where the side of the pocket is sewn to the clothing as well. You have that sometimes, for example, in pants pockets, some kinds of pants you have where the pocket is not only sewn on top, but it's also sewn on the side to the pants. Then we say it's not really, then it's not so bustled that it means that the beged itself contains coins, and then you have a problem moving that beged on Shabbos then you have, again, you could the only thing you could do maybe is shake the Beged. So again, if you deliberately left the coins there, then the Beged is going to be a busted for Zabra altar. If you didn't, then you can shake them out on Shabbos like the case of coins on a pillow.
So if you have, let's say, a coin which is attached with a needle to a Beged, are you allowed to move the Beged on Shabbos?
That's different. If you have it attached, well, why do you have a coin attached with a needle to the Beged? If you have it attached because now you made it, you're no longer using it as a coin. Now you're using it as a button, then fine, it's not mukta anymore. But if you're still planning to use it as a coin, it still has the dinim of mukta. But yeah, you can have any mukta item you're able before Shabbos. Coins, rocks, sticks, or whatever you can have before Shabbos, where you plan to use them for some purpose as mutter on Shabbos. You could take, for example, a rock, let's say, and designate before Shabbos that you're going to use it as a doorstop, let's say, and then sure, it's not mutter anymore. But if you can't decide on Shabbos that I need this rock for a doorstop. So the same thing with a coin. If you have a coin before Shabbos, you sewed it to a Beged. Now you're not using it as a coin anymore. Now you're using it as a button. Sure, that would be perfectly fine on Shabbos. But we're talking about regular coins that you left in a pocket. So again, in Shulchan Aruch, it draws that distinction between whether the pocket is only hanging from the Beged from its top and the rest of the pocket hangs free, versus if the pocket itself is sewn inside the Beged, as you have sometimes in pants pockets and jacket pockets or whatever, where there you have the question, do we say that the Beged as a whole is not a basis for davar aser, and therefore you'd be allowed to move the Beged versus you wouldn't be allowed to move the Beged if you left the coins there deliberately before Shabbos.
So you know they have these gold buttons that were old coins. They were.
Yes. Fine, but it's being used as a button. You're not using it as a coin anymore.
Right.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, I'm not even sure. For example, if let's say a person has a coin collection, where they have coins that they're not using for monetary purposes anymore, they're using them just to look at or whatever, I have no idea whether those would be mukta. The truth is, they might be mukta anyway on a different ground. They might be mukta machmas chisor and pis, because coins that you have for a coin collection, you would be very careful not to let them get damaged, because there goes your collection. So maybe they'd be mukta on that ground. They wouldn't necessarily be mukta as mukta machmas gufoi, because they're not used as coinage anymore. They're not used as money anymore. But I'm not sure about that.
Okay.